This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, July 7th, 2023, and today will be better than yesterday. I'm Buster Olney. I'm working in Seattle. Taylor and Sarah are working back. Taylor Schwenk, Sarah Abbott are working back in Connecticut. And guys, before the end of the show, I'm going to be asking you for your home run derby picks because the event's coming up on Monday and you're going to have to commit. Taylor?
I'll be thinking long and hard about it, Buster. I bet you can't guess who I'm going to pick.
You've got an Orioles cap on as you're talking. I'm surprised. I'm not surprised. Sarah, what about you? What are you ready?
I'm ready. I think I'm going to throw a curveball. Okay. No pun intended, but pun intended.
We love curveballs on this show. That's for sure. Taylor, really nice series for the Orioles against the Yankees. A great series. It's weird to say that a split series was a great series, but it felt that way with your team.
Yeah, you got two nice performances from Dean Kramer and Kyle Bradish, guys that are kind of, they're sort of 50-50 guys in the lineup. So when they can come out and perform, that's awesome. And then last night's absolute onslaught. I mean, I was just eating it up. I was waving goodbye to the Yankees fans as they shuffled out in the third inning from my couch. It was excellent. So yeah, and really demoralizing for the Yankees. Yankees couldn't gain any ground on the Orioles. I could talk a while about all this, Buster. Very, very exciting stuff.
Well, we'll get to it. We're going to be talking about that. We got Carl Ravitch coming on today. We're going to be talking about some trade deadline implications, the home run derby field, a lot going on there. Sarah Lang's going to join us. She's going to talk about her day at Yankee Stadium, which was a ton of fun. And Todd Radom will have this week's weekly quiz. And we're going to get his home run derby pick. The Cincinnati Reds never lose, it seems like. They faced the Nationals on Thursday, top of 10th inning. Score was 3-3 when this happened.
And he hits this ball high and deep and way back there and gone. Nick Senzel is the hero of the day. How about that? Oh, my goodness. Make a great play, lead off the next inning with a bomb.
How about that? 700 WLW. That was a Cowboy, Jeff Brantley. The Reds are now 49-39, 10 games over 500. They're two games ahead of the Brewers in the National League Central. It was just a week ago when we were talking about how the Mets couldn't buy a win. Well, they're now on a winning streak. They blew out the Diamondbacks on Thursday to finish a sweep with help from Pete Alonso, Francisco Lindor.
The 2-1. Punched deep down the left field line, a laser beam that gets out for a homer. Oh, a screamer by Alonso down the left field line into the Arizona bullpen. A sizzling two-run shot, and in the top of the first, the Mets have a 2-0 lead. Jameson's small windup, the 0-1. Swinging a crack in the air, deep right center field. It is out of here. What a shot! Could have been a splash hit in that pool in right center field. 9-0 New York Mets.
Yeah, it was an absolute blowout. By the way, Pete Alonso was my pick to win this year's Derby. I was kind of choosing between he and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. of the Blue Jays. I'm going to go with the experience of Alonso. The Mets in this blowout is getting so kind of crazy that Francisco Alvarez, who had a great series, was at the plate when this happened.
Oh. And that went off the mitt of Moreno. And did it hit Alvarez? It did.
It did.
And he's a little annoyed, and he's being steered to first base by Tripp Gibson. And now the Mets dugout is emptying, and here comes the Diamondbacks dugout as well. So after Alvarez homered three times and put on a little dance party last night when he circled the bases, the Diamondbacks perhaps taking a little bit of exception, and he gets drilled, and
it just nicked him.
Yeah, but he clearly took offense to it, and that's why Tripp Gibson got in the way so quickly, and that's what caused the benches to empty. Bullpen's emptying as well. Nobody doing anything but standing around.
In a game in which I had a lot of action from the Mets, this may have been the moment that had the most impact on the upcoming pennant race. Corbin Carroll at the plate for the Diamondbacks.
A change of Carrasco, uh-oh, and Corbin Carroll is injured.
Oh, man.
He's holding his right arm, and you have to worry about the right shoulder.
I think it's his shoulder.
The right shoulder, which is what he grabbed the other night when he felt that awkward sensation. Max Esposito will usher him off the field. And a bad night just got a whole lot worse.
Yeah.
Steve Brethune was on play-by-play on the Diamondbacks broadcast there. Yeah, Corbin Carroll, who had his right shoulder surgically repaired, I believe in 2021, again, having an issue with that shoulder. This is someone who right now is the easy front runner to be National League Rookie of the Year. He's probably running second in the MVP voting. After the game, Torey Lovullo talked about the injury.
The status of Corbin is that he has some right shoulder discomfort. There's no mystery to it. And, you know, things checked out a little bit more positive than I was expecting based on what I saw. We all saw the same thing. I just was this far from it. You guys probably saw it on a screen, on a TV screen. And, you know, it didn't look good. So for the last three or four innings, that's all I was thinking about was, like, how's Corbin? How's he emotionally? How's he physically? So I just got in here, and, I mean, we got some encouraging news.
Yeah, strength test came back better than maybe the Diamondbacks expected. We'll be hearing more about this. Corbin Carroll, of course, a product of the area in the Northwest. You wonder if this is going to make it impossible for him to play in the All-Star game, which would be a bummer here in Seattle. Phillies, Rays. Phillies have had a great week. Nobody can stop them. They continue to win in the shadow of the Atlanta Braves. Kyle Schwarber gave them the lead in the top of the 11th inning.
The pitch to Schwarber, swinging a ground ball through the right side, a base hit. Coming around third, Sosa, he's going to score. Stubbs will stop at second, and Kyle Schwarber with a base hit to right has put the Phillies on top 2-1.
And they went on to win this game. That's 19 out of 26 for the Phillies, which is why Sarah Abbott's wearing a Phillies cap as we produce this podcast today. Blue Jays, White Sox. Blue Jays won game one of the doubleheader. This happened in game two.
Line drive right center field, and that's down and getting to the fence. Bo Bichette is getting the wave. The relay to the plate, not in time. And then Guerrero gets hung up rounding second. So the Blue Jays lose another man on the bases, but Vladdy does drive in the go-ahead run on that double.
That was my man Dan Schulman on the Toronto Blue Jays television network. The Blue Jays win that game 6-4 to sweep a doubleheader. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has been getting hot in advance of this home run derby. Some news and notes. The Astros' Jose Altuve went on the injured list with an oblique injury. He told reporters that there is some information that this might not be as serious as they initially feared. Really sad news about the Dodgers' Daniel Hudson. He returned to the injured list after spraining his right MCL. This has been a problem for him. Knee issues. He made his season debut on June 30th after tearing the ACL in his left knee on June 2022. Dave Roberts told reporters yesterday, it's going to be a while before we see Daniel Hudson again. Yankees pitcher Jimmy Cordero was suspended for the final 76 games and the postseason. MLB said the 31-year-old reliever accepted the suspension for violating the sport's domestic violence policy. We mentioned the Orioles were in Yankee Stadium. They lost the first two games of a four-game series, but they won on Wednesday. And on Thursday, Gunnar Henderson had himself a day.
Pitch to Henderson. High fly ball, deep right field, forget about it. This one is way back and gone. Tape measure shot for Gunnar Henderson, second homer of the game. Number 13 on the year. And the Orioles are pouring it on the Bronx Bombers.
The final score there would be 14-1. After the game, Gunnar Henderson talked with Brett Hollander.
Gunnar, little could you have known in the top of the first inning, your big swing, there'd be another, 13 more runs and 19 more hits after your home run to lead off the game. What was it like to be a part of a total offensive attack like tonight?
Yeah, no, the offense has kind of been scuffling the past few games, and to come out here and to split the series with the Yankees on the road is pretty big.
Aaron Boone talked about the disappointing loss. A lot of conversation after the game about Luis Severino and what the Yankees should do to try to get him right.
Well, I mean, obviously tonight's just a bad night for us. No fun to go through, but part of it, you know, we got to obviously kind of dig deep and get Sevy to where he needs to be. Tonight's a frustrating night, obviously. No one likes getting beat over the head.
And here's Luis Severino.
I mean, right now, you know, this doesn't affect my confidence. You know, I know the kind of pitcher that I am. I'm really not been myself, you know. I think I've never been this bad of a pitcher my whole life. So it's just a little tough to get my head around and I can't do nothing else than keep trying to get better.
Taylor, what else you got?
Buster, I have to mention, next week we are having an episode entirely presented by our pals at Granger. We love Granger here on the Baseball Tonight podcast. So I wanted to mention that. We'll do that probably on Friday as we sort of look ahead to the second half of the season. But that's it, Buster. Let's get into the show.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11 ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. For the ones who get it done, Granger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by.
All aboard. It's the Rabbit Train with Carl Ravage.
Carl Ravage, play-by-play man on Sunday Night Baseball and the host of ESPN's Major League Baseball draft coverage on Sunday and the host of the Home Run Derby on Monday. Ravi, I'd ask you where you are, but it feels like you're everywhere right now.
Well, the Ravi train is giving way to the Ravi plane, so we are at Logan Airport getting set to board a flight to Seattle for all of the aforementioned and the All-Star Game and baseball tonight. Between the College World Series and then the All-Star Game, it's probably the busiest and best 2 weeks of the summer for me until we get into the playoffs, you know, in October.
Yeah, and tonight, dinner, right? You, Chris, Eduardo, you know, with Kelly Carey, Liz.
Buster all, only, I'm excited, Buster dinner. Only, Liz. I mean, are you kidding me? That restaurant is so excited to have Buster only in there. And Eduardo, oh, right. I promise you, you're going to be treated like royalty.
Well, Eduardo is royalty here in Seattle, right?
Buster, Eduardo's royalty everywhere. You know that. Everybody knows that. Wherever Eduardo goes, he's as well known as the king and everyone else that's royalty. He's that guy. He caters to the bourgeoisie and everyone else all the way down. He's a beautiful person. So, Eduardo, you're right. I mean, I did sell you there, but it's really Eduardo they're coming to see. And more importantly, it's really Murba.
All right. So it was fun doing the Home Run Derby unveiling the other day with the brackets on Wednesday. It is a great field, and I love the matchups. Like, there are not a lot of times where I've gone into one of these derbies and been excited about individual matchups, but in this case, that seems to be one of the highlights.
100%. The idea that you have Alonso and Rodriguez in the first round is unbelievable. I mean, that's a championship, you know, round. So the idea that we kick it off with those two, and you have both the former Cardinals, and this is going to be a tough pill for St. Louis fans to see a Rosarena there with Garcia. That's a tough one, but they're going to deal with that. I think what strikes me about this derby is when you don't have Aaron Judge and you don't have Ohtani, there's nobody that overshadows the whole event individually. We have eight guys, I think all of which can win. I clearly think it's stacked against Rutschman and Betts. But the idea that we're going into this, as good as Alonso has been, Vlad hasn't done it for a few years. It's as wide open a derby field as I can remember. And I think that's what makes me look at this as one of the best, at least on paper, that I can remember. I'm intrigued and excited about this, unlike years past where, you know, if you lose one guy, you're like, oh, boy, we're in trouble. Like, that's not the case this year.
No. And I got to say, Eduardo, during the show the other night, got me jacked up for this Dolis Garcia and Randy Rosarena first-round matchup.
Yeah.
You know, two guys who were roommates, as you pointed out, they were roommates as they came up in the Cardinals system. And now they're in the home run derby. You know, two guys born in Cuba. There's going to be a lot of conversation, a lot of smack talk there. You know, Mookie Betts, as we talked about last week, has kind of been talking down his chances. And meanwhile, he was out with Clayton McCullough yesterday at Dodger Stadium, practicing for the Derby, getting ready. It feels like that he kind of sandbagging us before his first run matchup against Vladimir Guerrero Jr. It's going to be fun. Like, I'm pretty jacked up about it.
You know, I've been asked a couple of times here in the last few days by various outlets, what is it about the Derby that succeeds relative to other all-star related events? And the idea that Mookie Betts is practicing, or that Randy Arozarena happened to be in Seattle with the Rays and decided, I'm going to take a few rounds to see where the ball flies out.
And Pete Alonso was practicing in January for this.
Well, right? It's an exhibition. They take it very seriously. And that, you know the intensity of Alonso, but the idea that Mookie is practicing, like, A, nobody wants to embarrass themselves. And maybe they look at it like, you know what? I can win it. You know, that Judge guy's not in it. Stanton isn't in it. The huge, almost assured home run dudes. And Alonso deserves that, but I just don't think he's looked at that way. Plus, he was beaten last year. So there's a bit of a vulnerability there that everybody thinks they can win it. And we're going to actually practice for it, which is what makes it so great. It's a real event. It's a real competition.
And I love the X factor of the BP pitchers who are working, right? Because you can only be as good as that person is effective. We've seen situations, with all due respect to, you know, fathers, sometimes they have struggled with this, suddenly the unfamiliarity of being in the middle of 50,000 people are going crazy with no batting cage, which all the batting practice pitchers tell you is something they have to get used to, right? Not seeing that. And that's why I think Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has a bit of an advantage. John Schneider is throwing to him, his former manager. Pete Alonso is going with a guy who's relatively, you know, who's not done an event like this. Someone he wanted to honor from his middle school years. And then you have Clayton McCullough. I mentioned, I could see Mookie Betts and Clayton McCullough working it out, where Clayton McCullough is throwing on a mound every day in a big league ballpark.
Yeah.
If he gets into a groove where he hits the same spot, you know, probably middle in, and Mookie just hooks a bunch of home runs, I think he could shock everybody. But that's always the fun for me, is how nervous are those guys?
I don't think there's any doubt. You know, Adley Rutschman's dad's going to do it, which I think sometimes you go into this and you look at it like, oh, my God, we're here. This is great. Let's enjoy it. We're going to have fun. I've heard Luis Robert say, you know, I want to have fun at it. I think it changes once you get in that box. But if you're the guy that's throwing the balls and all of a sudden the first few start to almost act like sliders, just think, put yourself in any environment where
first pitches. Carl, we see people do first pitches, right?
You can't get a serve in. You're a golfer and you can't hit a fairway. And you realize, like, it's off the tracks and you can't do anything to fix it. And now you have this clock hanging over your shoulder and you have this pressure to fix it in the moment. That's really, really hard. So I do think that people who have experience doing it is one thing that that gives those guys an advantage. And I do think those that don't and choose to use this as either a tribute to the person, a way to let them know you're grateful for what they did for you, Pete Alonso, Adley Rutschman, growing up and getting us to this moment. Let's go out and enjoy it. I do think that there is an advantage to the guy that can kind of block all that stuff out. And when you're talking about guys who do it every day on a major league mound and throw batting practice, absolutely, they can fix it. They get it.
All right. I mentioned the draft coverage that you guys will have on Sunday night. What's the big intrigue for you in round one, top of the draft?
Well, I mean, the Pirates are always intriguing as the team that picks first. They've done it a whole bunch of times. We just saw it recently with Davis, and now he's up there, but they tend to go under slot. And I think the intrigue in this one is you seem to have a pitcher in this Paul Skeens, who's 6'6", and dominated for LSU, being compared to the Garrett Coles and the Steven Strasburgs, meaning he's an outlier. Because there's all sorts of risk in taking a pitcher number one. And yet he makes such a compelling case because he's so unique in his size. He was a two-way player 2 years ago at Air Force. His coach, Jay Johnson, said if he were a batter this year, he would have hit 20 to 30 home runs.
Wow.
He's that unique that it seems like there is this dynamic, which is you can't afford not, you have to take it, like you have to. And you can see Ben Cherington's comment the other day, when you pick first in the draft, it generally is the best player. But when you have as many picks and the opportunity to be number one, you also want to make sure you get as much talent as you can out of the draft, which is, to me, a little bit of a hedge away from a guy like Schemes and maybe to somebody like Wyatt Langford or somebody who take under slot money so you can then later pay more. But boy, you know, Chris Burke, Kyle Peterson, they all have said it, you can't not name Paul Skeens your number one pick. So there's no question at the very top, there's great intrigue. LSU is trying to become the first school to have guys taken one and two in a draft with Dylan Cruz. But Skeens is the overarching topic going into this because he's so unique. And he could pitch this year, Buster. He's in the majors this year if they want him to.
I'm going to double back real quick. I should have asked you for your Derby pick. Who you got?
You know, the sleeper pick for me is Adolis Garcia. I'm going to pick him. I think it's really unique what he does. I think the year he's having, the year the Rangers are having, I think the Vlad Pete thing, that side of the bracket is brutal. I mean, you know, one thing you got to consider is I assume that Julio Rodriguez is going to put up a great show and he could beat Alonso. So that's like a battle. You know, Vlad Guerrero and Mookie is a battle. It's not going to be I don't think there's any rollovers there. And then you got to, let's just say Vlad and Pete are going against each other. Like that's another battle. What's left? You know, what's going to be left for those guys? I just think Adolis can get through his first round. I'm assuming Robert will beat Rutschman. That it's just an easier road. So I'm going to go dark horse Adolis Garcia.
Okay. Shohei Ohtani is now going to be playing without Mike Trout. And the question has dominated baseball last 48 hours since Trout had that wrist surgery is, you know, will the Angels consider trading Ohtani before the deadline? Should they, you know, my perspective is, look, if you're already Moreno, delivering that guy out of town is a really difficult thing to have as part of your baseball legacy. And yes, you can make an argument that maybe the right baseball move would be to flip him for talent. And maybe that's the way they land. But I just remember last year hearing the stories about how when the Angels front office doing its due diligence, went out, talked to other teams, gathered information, then took the concept to Artie. And from what I understand, Artie went crazy. And he was like, we're not trading that guy. And you know, baseball history is filled with so few examples of guys who were traded and then re-signed with the team once they hit free agency. Aroldis Chapman did it. If you're Artie Moreno, you're essentially delivering this incredibly unique talent, the most popular player in the world, out of town. I don't think he's going to do it, Carl, even if they continue to drift down in the wild card standings. What would you do?
Yeah, I think the only way it happens is if you get a Herschel Walker type return, meaning you get four or five major league ready players. And then I think what has to happen and what may happen is that team that does that, I think will actually not look at Ohtani as a guy that they will build around in the next 4 or 5 years. I think the team that's willing to part with those players also is intending on winning the next year. As hard as that may seem, I guess I have the Mets in mind, where a team like the Mets would say, you know what, look where we are this year. I know we're playing a little bit better, but let's not forget about the Braves and what the Phillies are doing. But if we trade three or four players and we get Ohtani, next year we rebuild to win with Ohtani. We don't look at this as a long-term thing. And if we're trading those players, it's because we're signing him. We're not doing this for a stretch run. We are going to sign him. We're going to make it impossible for him not to. So that may all be impossible. That may not even be a scenario, but that's the only scenario I see where they would do it. You're getting a haul of major league ready players because Mike Trout ain't leaving, and we got to be competitive for years to come. And the team that does it has to sign him, and they have to also say, we're going to be competitive next year. Very, you know, that's a hard needle to thread, but that's how I look at it.
The two teams that I think might be in a must, all-in scenario where maybe they would consider it and affording it, for me, the Texas Rangers, who we've already seen, they made the move for Aroldis Chapman, but I wonder if Artie Moreno is so old school that he would say, we're not trading him in the division. Yankees, given the structure of their team, you know, you got Aaron Judge, you got Giancarlo Stanton, you got Gerrit Cole, given their ages, this is their window to win. And maybe, and we've heard the stories about, you know, questions about whether or not Ohtani wants to play in New York. Maybe the Yankees look at it as, you know what, we're going to bring him here, show him how much fun it is, how much fun it would be for him to aim at that right field every day, give him a taste of it, and increase our chances to win the World Series this year. Those two teams. I don't see the Dodgers going crazy to trade for him. I think they'll hold their assets back and take a run at him in free agency. So that's one to watch. Alec Manoah starts for the Toronto Blue Jays today. This is all about the trade deadline, I think, Carl, where the Blue Jays want to get information on Manoah, whether or not he can help them going forward with their season. I think, you know, starting him against the Detroit Tigers, a weak lineup, that's a smart thing to do, sort of baby step his way back in to the rotation. If they don't like what they see, then they have clarity on what they have to add before the deadline. What do you think?
I think it makes a lot of sense, and I think it's a great litmus test, too, to find out what Manoah's made out of. I mean, Carlos Carrasco was sort of on the verge of being bumped out of the Met rotation and delivered his best start of the year.
Yeah.
So I think they look at it like, look, Alec, we've tried this. We sent you down. That didn't go so well. Here is your chance now to prove to yourself and to us and to the other teams. But I think more importantly, it's a message to him. We want you to be a part of this, but we also recognize it hasn't gone well. And as a result of that, this is an opportunity for you to prove to us, or, you know, let's show the other teams. The thing about the Blue Jays, and you know this, they know Manoah better than anybody. They know what he's like off the field. They know what's led to this. I think they have ideas of what's led to this regression, and they probably have ideas whether this is fixable or not. And this is the organization that knows him better than others. It makes great sense to try to do this. They're a playoff quality type team with the talent they have. Manoah, I think we all looked at going into this year as the guy that's going to be the anchor in that rotation. Forget the anchor that brings you down to the bottom of the ocean, but the guy that actually stabilizes it, and it's been just the opposite.
Jack Flaherty opened my eyes yesterday with his performance against the Marlins. He threw more than 50% four-seam fastballs. His velocity was up. We had Derek Gould of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch in the podcast the other day, and he talked about for the Cardinals, they do have marketable pitchers, Flaherty being one of those. This is the one time of year, Carl, where it feels like small sample size can make a difference, where teams can look at Flaherty's last two starts and say, you know what, maybe he's turned the corner.
Well, I'll take it back to the first question you asked about the Major League draft. There's this guy, Ty Floyd, who pitched for LSU in the College World Series and threw pitches at 97 miles an hour up above the letters, and everybody swung at it. Ty Floyd made himself a couple of $1 million in the draft, basically off of one real great appearance. Your point about Flaherty is absolutely relevant. And he, I think, with that performance, continues to remind everybody that if he's going to be available, and the Cardinals never are in this position. You know, they've had, two losing years in the last 16. They're never in this position. But if he's available, he is the guy, assuming Ohtani's not. But he's the guy. And, you know, the one thing about Jack, I remember there was that start in which his velocity was down, but he pitched well enough to win. He said, well, I didn't need to throw it that hard. That's just a little cautionary flag in my head, meaning he knows it's in there, but there's a reason he's not using it all. And I wonder what that reason would be. Yesterday, maybe he said, screw it. I mean, I am going to let it out. I am going to show everybody. I know it's in there, and be damned whatever it is, it's causing me not to use it all the time. I don't know what that is, but it just struck me as there's something going on there in his own mind.
Yeah, it reminded me watching a pitch yesterday of watching Chris Sale before he got hurt.
Exactly.
That feeling of, you know what, I'm going to let it go. I've not been good. I'm just going to throw the ball as hard as I can and then see what happens, and it certainly worked for him. The other day, a couple quick ones for you before you go. The other day, the Reds and the Nationals played. Here's the sound of Ellie De La Cruz hitting a home run.
This ball is tagged. Right center field, hit a ton and gone. Into the second deck in right center field. It's a solo home run for Ellie De La Cruz, 5-1 Reds.
That was a line drive. I just got finished saying earlier, that's no man's land out there at that wall. Votto got into the second row. That ball not only hit in the upper deck out in right center field, it was a line drive bullet.
That from 700 WLW, and when he hit the home run, he immediately pointed the knob of his bat because his bat had been challenged earlier in the game by Dave Martinez, the Nationals manager. Here's David Bell, the Reds manager, after the game.
A knob on his bat that had, that we as an organization got approved by Major League Baseball. The umpires did not have record of that. The replay crew where they called to double check it didn't have record of it, so we had to take an extra step, get word to the replay crew, and then the umpiring crew contacted them, and by the second at bat it was cleared up.
And here's Dave Martinez, who had asked for the bat to be checked. He was not happy with Ellie De La Cruz pointing at the knob while looking into the Nationals dugout.
I love the way he plays the game. I don't like his antics, you know, after he hit the home run. We could do without that. He's only got 2 weeks in big leagues, but you know, he's going to be a good player.
I love Dave Martinez, but I thought the other day he was kind of on shaky ground because, Carl, you and I know he could have just sent word to the Reds dugout. Hey, you know what? The knob, we have some questions. Just keep an eye on that. Or maybe after the game, hey, the knob. He chose to challenge it in the game, and, you know, Ellie De La Cruz dunked on him.
Like, to me, it's a resignation from Davey that this guy's better than a lot of the things we have, and I'm kind of bothered by that. And as a veteran in this game who's been around superstar players, he's probably sending a message like, that's not how I would do things. I think there's better ways to do things. So kind of keep an eye out on you know, on what you're doing. I don't think Ellie De La Cruz particularly, you know, pays much attention to it. I certainly think David Bell sticking up for his player, but I can, you know, you can kind of, you know, Davey, I know Davey, I like Davey.
It's a
backhanded compliment. It's a backhanded compliment. This guy's going to be great, but if you're going to be great, you don't, you know, that's not how great players behave, quote unquote. And, you know, I'm letting him know we didn't particularly like the knob pointing. And I look, if the umpires didn't know about the Reds going out and getting approval, I'm sure David Martinez didn't necessarily know about it either. So there may have been some lines of communication crossed there, but that's a message. The guy's damn good. He's better than, you know, I'd love him on my team. I would probably whisper in his ear, you don't need to do that, but that's who he is. And I think that's okay. I applaud everything about Ellie De La Cruz and the way he's gone about what he's done.
Last one. Give me 30 seconds on this. Cody Bellinger is going crazy lately. The timing seems perfect for the Cubs. It looked like they're going to trade both Bellinger and Marcus Stroman.
Yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of this particular time of year, Buster, is you get players like Jack Flaherty, like Bellinger. Carrasco makes a statement for his own team. Manoah's making an appearance today, and this is an audition in some ways. Sure, it's great. I think, look, I love Bellinger. Bellinger's got a pedigree. Bellinger, when he gets on a roll, is as good a left-handed home run hitter as we have. I root for him, so I'm glad for the Cubs it's working out. And maybe more importantly, I'm happy for Bellinger that he may get a chance to play on a contender.
All right, Carl, we'll see you later.
Enjoy dinner. Can't wait to see you.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
0-0-9-6.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com, someone who was honored at Yankee Stadium on Tuesday. Sarah, we had Brian Cashman on the podcast yesterday. He talked about your appearance at Yankee Stadium. Saw tons of video of you. You know, heard you in the press conference. When Garrett Cole announced that your folks were going to be thrown out the first pitch. I'm curious, were they totally surprised or had they gotten a heads up a little bit before that?
They were completely surprised. So I got a heads up maybe 2 or 3 days before Jason Zillo of the Yankees and Caitlin Brennan have reached out to me and said, hey, you know, we'd like to do this. And I said, okay. And they said, yeah, I think if you're okay not telling them, we're going to surprise them with it in some way. And I said, great, because I did not want to be the one to tell them. I did not want to get the stress going, have them worrying. So I thought it was a perfect plan to tell them day of, but they were totally surprised. Their faces were amazing. It was so, so great. And they did a great job. I was so impressed with both of them. I mean, my dad with the great overhand throw, but even my mom, she threw underhand. She hadn't thrown a baseball probably ever, and it was still really good. Great pick by Booney, of course, son of a catcher. I saw that with how he caught it. It was so perfect.
Yeah, I was imagining your dad, who plays tennis all the time. Like, he's an athlete. Yeah. Like, he loves it. I when I heard that, I was like, no, he will definitely be excited about doing that. Like, he would be totally fired up. Give me a moment that, and I'm sure you have many, but give me a moment that'll always stick with you that you had that day, whether, because, and I'm going to try to coax this out of you, because you'll never volunteer these moments when, and I don't know if an Aaron Judge or another player came up or somebody came up to talk to you. What was kind of a cool moment for you?
Oh my goodness. I mean, I just, again, want to say how great of a job the Yankees did with the entire day. You know, we talk all the time, we hear all the time about the Yankees being a world-class organization. My biggest takeaway, and I've been to so many Yankees games, I've covered Yankees games, I know how good they are as a team, I know all of these things, but going away from the game, I could not stop thinking, this is why they are the Yankees. And the way they approached it, how thoughtful everything was. I mean, I was so grateful for the fact that one of the things I said to them early on when they told me they wanted to honor me was that I wanted it to be about young women living with ALS, not just about me. And there were, I believe, 7 other young women who were there on the field. And I mean, it was such a subtle thing, but they brought us out onto the field before the game. They had players and Booney come out and each kind of stand with us, chat with us. And they gave us each flowers. It was 2 roses, a white one and a blue one for the Yankees. But even a little touch like that felt so thoughtful, so incredible. So I loved all of that. And of course, we toured the Yankees Museum, and the curator put Lou Gehrig's hat on my head, which was a very, very wild moment, but also pretty incredible to have a tangible link to Lou Gehrig in that moment, sitting there on the 84th anniversary of his speech. So it was just such a wonderful day. I had 4 friends who I go back to kindergarten, first grade, and 9th grade with, who came to the game. I had texted 2 of them way back when I learned about this. I said, hey, the Yankees are honoring me. I know you're Yankees fans, and they rallied a whole group. So it was pretty wonderful to see all of them. And for my parents, I mean, I think that was really cool for them to see people who had known me for so long and who they have known for so long. So just top to bottom, an amazing day.
All right. So people don't realize, or maybe casual fans don't realize, that back in the 20s, the players swung tree trunks. Like, these bats are so much bigger than they are now. It's like a crazy how big they were. What was it like to hold Lou Gehrig's bat? I mean, and did it jump out at you like this thing is huge?
Yeah, you know, it looked totally different than the best thing, even because the way the wood is treated is so different. When you think of a bat today, you think of something that's kind of shiny almost, right? And with this, you really saw the grain of the wood. And the other thing was that the bat was specifically from a certain year in the 30s when there was a kind of dueling company to Louisville Slugger that gained traction for a while because of the chemicals they put on the wood that made them last a bit longer. The company was called Bat Right, and their logo was literally a bat, like the animal, with the words Bat Right in it. So that bat that you may have seen the photo of me holding has a little, like, it looks like Batman or something with a little bat on it. It was really, really cool to see. Apparently, Gary used that for like 2 years. And then Louisville Slugger started using the same chemicals, so their bats would last longer, and you went back to them. But I thought the logo was so clever. I wish that it persisted. Obviously, the company didn't make it.
No, that's a cool story. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
So we have to talk about Francisco Alvarez because he just had an incredible series for the Mets in Arizona. He had three home runs, a home run each game of the series. It was the third time in Mets franchise history that a rookie has hit three home runs in a three-game series. He did it in this series. He also did it in a series in June against the Braves. And then in 1964, Larry Elliott did it in a July series against the Reds. So that means in all of Mets history, before this year, even with Pete Alonso setting the rookie home run record, no other rookie in Mets history had done this until this year. And now Francisco Alvarez has done it twice in the span of a month. And his home run in the second game of the series was that game-tying home run with 2 outs and 2 strikes on Wednesday. That was his fifth game-tying or go-ahead home run in the sixth inning or later this season. That is the most in baseball. Everyone, not rookies, not catchers, everybody in baseball. He has the most of those clutch home runs, and he is a 21-year-old rookie catcher. And I think back to that series we had in the postseason last year, the Padres and the Mets. He seemed very overmatched. He was put in some positions where you felt badly. You just felt like there was too much pressure on him for the moment. Think about how much he has grown as a player and as a personality in that span. Now he's the guy every Mets fan will want up in those moments.
Number two is eight.
So we're saying in the NL East, actually, for this entire numbers game, we'll go with another youngster in the division, and that's Yuri Perez. So he has now gone at least 5 innings and allowed 1 or 0 runs in 8 of his first 11 career starts. Even with that tough start in Atlanta a couple weeks ago, overall, he has gotten it back together, been really good. 6 innings, 1 run yesterday. 8 starts of at least 5 innings, allowing 1 run or fewer, is the most of any pitcher in his first 11 career appearances among pitchers to debut since at least 1901. And I know that, you know, there's always an element of guys haven't seen you before, especially when you're 20 years old. There isn't a ton of video on him, even from the minors. But we're 11 starts in now. He had a bad start in Atlanta where he got that one out. And the fact that he has now bounced back and shown that he is still doing this is really, really encouraging to see.
Number one is one.
So we round out the tour of the NL East for today with the Braves in the first inning. And you and I have gone back and forth on this. We talked about this earlier in the week, but I just wanted to go back over all of the numbers the Braves in the first inning of the season heading into this final weekend before the All-Star break. They have 91 runs scored. That's the most of any team in any inning this year. 29 home runs. Again, most of any team in any inning. 128 hits. Also the most of any team in any inning. And a plus 66 run differential.
It's crazy.
It is 24 runs better than any other team in any inning. I mean, once they get off to those starts, it just seems like it's almost impossible for a team to come back. And that's why it's such a surprise these days when they lose a game.
You know, I love to put you in a difficult spot, Sarah, where you have to make choices. So I'm going to put this one in front of you. You're Skip Schumacher. You're the manager of the Marlins. You entered the postseason, shockingly. And right now, the Marlins would be in the postseason, you know, and he probably at this point is in the conversation for manager of the year. Who's your game one starter in the playoffs? You got the reigning National League Cy Young Award winner, and then you have Eury Pérez pitching this great. Tell me who you're going with.
I mean, if Pérez is still pitching this well at that point, I think it has to be him. Yep. And knowing the relationship between those two, I think Sandy Alcantara would likely say the same. They have this great mentorship that's been documented. As I mentioned, last week, 2 weeks ago, his nickname is the Baby Goat, and that's an allusion to Sandy being that goat. So I do think that Sandy would feel the same. And again, you have to go on results right now. And Sandy Alcantara is not having as good of a season right now as Eury Pérez is.
All right, and I need a home run derby pick from you. And before you give me, I just want to let you know there's money riding on it. We talked off air before you came on the podcast. I, you know, had a bet with Sarah and Taylor as to who you're going to pick. Who you got?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know I'm going to pick Julio. We're going to have a hometown winner.
Yep. Just hand over the deed, Taylor. You know, I was right there. I nailed that one.
Oh, it was so easy. I saw that coming from a mile away.
I mean, I loved how Eduardo said on the bracket show on Wednesday, it's his month, it's Julio, right? That's how you say July in Spanish. I'm pulling for him. We've had three winners in their home ballpark. We had Ryan Sandberg back in 1990, Todd Frazier and Cincy in 2015, and then Bryce Harper in 2018 in D.C. There's so much to it, but Julio would be the youngest winner. And my favorite thing is that, you know, we're in Seattle. Julio is on the Mariners. Ken Griffey Jr. is the king of the home run derby. He won the most. He has three. As of right now, that's solely the most. But he was never the youngest guy to win it, and he never got a chance to win it in his home ballpark. So I love the idea that Julio has a chance to do two things that even Griffey never did.
All right, before you go, I've asked you about Lou Gehrig's bat, and you mentioned the hat, and you know the first quality of the first pitch is from your folks. That's what we talked about. Those are things that I noticed. What I never noticed are clothes. Taylor just came in raving today about what you wore at Yankee Stadium the other day. Taylor, please detail.
She had on a nice pair of Nike high top dunks, I believe, and they were yellow. They looked awesome. They were perfect for the occasion. Went spectacularly with your outfit. So I commend you with that. I'm not a fashionista, but they really popped for me, Sarah. I thought you looked great. Are those... in heavy rotation? Was that a special occasion for those shoes?
Well, I'm also not a fashionista and certainly not a sneakerhead, but I got those at the beginning of the year. I wore them to every game in spring training. They're some of my go-tos when I'm not, you know, out and having a fun day. So I was really excited to wear them there, and I love that you noticed them. So thank you.
All right, Sarah. Thanks for doing this. I will see you Monday. Home Run Derby, you're coming out to Seattle. That'll be fun, rooting on your guy Julio.
I love the derby. I can't wait for it. I hope everyone is as excited as I am and as we are.
Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America, all around the world. Or you can go to his website, toddradom.com. Todd, how are you doing this week?
Buster, it's All-Star Week, so I am very excited.
Nice, which is why we need from you a home run derby pick. You've seen the field of eight, and I need you to pick one of the eight competitors. Who's going to be holding up the trophy at the end of it the way Pete Alonso has done a couple times?
The hometown boy, Buster. That's who it's going to be.
Julio Rodriguez. You're going Julio with him?
Absolutely. We you saw what happened last year. He's got home field advantage. The crowd is going to be going wild. And we've seen that home field advantage in play in the home run derby before. Thinking of Bryce Harper in Washington. Thinking of many others. I've been to something like 28 of these things. So, yep, that's my prediction.
All right. Let's get to this week's Forgotten Field.
All right, Buster, I have attended Major League Baseball games in more than 50 ballparks, and today's venue, Milwaukee County Stadium, stands above just about all others as perhaps the most fun fan experience I can remember. Beers, bratwurst, tailgating, sausage races, and Bernie Brewer's chalet, all of it. It was not a luxurious ballpark by any means, but it certainly punched above its weight when it came to local culture and personality. County Stadium served as home to three current MLB franchises, the Brewers, the Milwaukee Braves, and the Chicago White Sox, who played a total of 20 home games there in 1968 and 1969. Hank Aaron hit the 755th and final home run of his illustrious career there. That was on July 20th, 1976. County Stadium was also the site of what was arguably the greatest pitching performance in the history of Major League Baseball, mm-hmm. when Pittsburgh's Harvey Haddix threw 12 perfect innings against the hometown Braves before losing both the no-hitter and the game in the 13th inning. It was the second ballpark in the United States financed with public funds. Cleveland Stadium came first. That was in 1931. County Stadium hosted three World Series, two All-Star Games, and it served as an alternate home field for the Green Bay Packers for four decades. The idea of Major League Baseball-ready stadium in Milwaukee was first broached in the first decade of the 20th century. Milwaukee had previously hosted a National League team in 1878 and an American League club in 1901. Each franchise lasted but a single season. Construction on what would be County Stadium began in 1950 on the site of a former stone quarry. Initially slated to play host to the minor league Milwaukee Brewers, County Stadium replaced aging, dilapidated Borchert Field, that team's longtime home. With the minor league Brewers still in place, Milwaukee sought to lure the St. Louis Browns northward. That effort failed, but in March 1953, the Boston Braves announced that they were moving there. The first MLB franchise shift in half a century. The Braves' new home cost about $6 million to build, and it was the first MLB stadium to include lights when constructed. The original seating capacity was 36,000. This was later expanded to 53,000. The original scoreboard, paid for by the Miller Brewing Company. This was replaced in 1980 with a state-of-the-art digital scoreboard, which included a computerized display screen illuminated by some 30,000 40-watt light bulbs. The Braves were a smash hit right out of the gate. Milwaukee embraced their new club with open arms and open wallets, and the club went from last in the league in attendance in 1952 while in Boston, averaging just 3,653 fans a game, to first during their inaugural campaign in Milwaukee, with more than 23,000 fans filling the ballpark each and every night. These early Braves teams featured Hall of Famers Hank Aaron, Warren Spahn, and Eddie Matthews, and they helped propel the club to two consecutive pennants, 1957, when they defeated the Yankees in the World Series, and 1958, when the rematch went the other way, with the Yankees winning in seven games. Milwaukee's love affair with their Braves eventually wilted, and the club moved to Atlanta in 1966. The Brewers, however, arrived from Seattle just prior to the 1970 season, and they played at County Stadium until Miller Park replaced it in 2001. They still play roll out the barrel during the seventh inning stretch at now what's now called American Family Field, but sausage races, tailgating, and secret stadium sauce all originated at Milwaukee County Stadium, which is this week's Forgotten Field.
That is a great entrant for sure in this summer-long treat that you've been giving us, Todd. I will tell you that, you know, when I was a beat writer, I loved to run in these ballparks. And I loved running in County Stadium. I think when I was covering the Orioles in 1995, brought my shoes there early, or it was after a game, and got to run around it. I did in Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, some other ballparks. If you could jog in one park and sort of meander your way through one park in that way, what park would it be in baseball history?
In baseball history, all of baseball history.
Yeah. I've got a guess as to which one you're going to pick.
Well,
I'm thinking you're going to say Ebbets Field.
I was going to say Ebbets Field because obviously we're too young to have attended any games there. I would just want to check this out. I want to go into every nook and cranny and see what it was like. And I've had the opportunity, Buster, to, like you, take ballpark tours, really in-depth things into the bowels of stadiums where, you know, people normally don't go. I've been to Fenway Park a million times. I love it. I've been to every square inch of it, it seems like. Ebbets Field. What about you?
Yeah, that one. And also the Polo Grounds, because it was so uniquely shaped. Like, and I imagine going on a jog where, you know, what was it, 270 feet down the left field line? And then you go out to straightaway center field where Willie Mays made that catch over his head, where I think it was like 480 feet to straightaway center field where the clubhouses were. I mean, imagine being a losing player in the Polo Grounds and making that long trek the way that Ralph Branca did after the home run by Bobby Thompson. So that would be a fun place to go back in history. All right, let's get to this week's quiz.
All right, everybody, here we go. Week 18 of our quiz. Aaron Judge won the 2022 American League MVP award. Which of these Yankees never won the MVP while playing in Yankee pinstripes? Was it A, Don Mattingly? Was it B, Derek Jeter? Was it C, Spud Chandler? Or was it D, Joe Gordon? One of these guys never won an MVP while wearing a Yankee uniform. Mattingly, Jeter, Spud Chandler, or Joe Gordon?
All right, Sarah, wearing the Phillies cap today. Which of those four?
Why do I always have to go first?
Make Taylor go first?
No, it's okay. I got this. Okay. I'm going to go C, Spud Chandler.
Okay, Taylor?
I'll go Don Mattingly. Probably wrong.
It was Derek Jeter.
Buster. No guess with this. This was too easy for you. Sorry, Sarah. Sorry, Taylor. But yes, it was the captain, Derek Jeter.
I think the highest he ever finished in an MVP race was third, if memory serves me right. So he was not close. Mattingly at time. But yes, Bud Chandler, Joe Gordon, not two of the best known Yankee immortals, but they had MVP seasons.
And Joe Gordon, a Hall of Famer.
Yep.
I'm not sure about Spud Chandler. Mattingly on the cusp, and of course, Derek Jeter rises above the rest. MVP or no MVP.
There you go. All right, Todd, thanks for doing this.
Have a great All-Star Week, everybody.
Bleacher Tweets.
Already, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for a Friday. And a couple things here. I'm going to throw a curveball at you, a Bleacher Tweet that came in this morning from Brian Roll. He writes, and what did the Yankees do about Severino? I know spring training stats don't matter, but he was getting hit like this in spring training too. Taylor, don't be too giddy reading this.
You keep rolling him out there. You hope he improves. You hope he works on some things. And I think you make evaluations as we get close to the deadline. That's part of what it's interesting. I don't think the Yankees have a chance to sign Ohtani in free agency, but you know what? It makes sense to me that if the Angels were to put him out there, they would be the team to go all in because of the age of the other stars on that team. You get Ohtani, fills that spot in the rotation. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. No doubt.
And you know, and I know, look, the Orioles, you know, have the prospects to go trade for Ohtani, but there's no chance that the Orioles would make give up prospect guys on a rental like that. No way.
No, absolutely not. And they're definitely not, you know, throwing all the money at him to try and sign him. And, you know, like Ravi was saying earlier, like make him an offer he can't refuse. The Orioles would absolutely never do that. So,
I disagree with Ravi. How many times do you see teams trade for a guy and then sign him before he has free agency? Ohtani's going to get into free agency. Mm-hmm. You're not going to keep him from doing that.
Yeah. If you're him, you I feel like you got it. You got to do it for yourself. See what's out there.
Yep.
Let's go to David Skaggs at David Skaggs 37. He writes, and if there was only one MVP, I assume Otani would still win, but how close might Acuna be, and what would it take for Acuna to beat Otani?
Well, Otani would have to get hurt in the second half and close the gap. I mean, Otani is would be the player of the year, so to speak, in Major League Baseball. And Acuna is having an unbelievable year. He's a prohibitive favorite to win the MVP in the National League. But one thing that would work against Acuna in a player of the year voting for me is the fact that the Braves are so damn good. Like Aaron Judge last year propped up the Yankees, you know, in times when they went through that stretch in August where they were just awful. But Acuna right now is part of this machine of an offense that Sarah Langs likes to tweet about on a daily basis, it feels like.
RVB, Russ writes in, who will be the best managerial and front office candidates this offseason? The Cardinals need change and they need someone from the outside.
So there are two names that are floating around. Of course, David Stearns, who, and I'm not suggesting this is what the Cardinals are going to go. I think that Bill DeWitt really values John Mozeliak. They've had a lot of success in most time running that job. I think that relationship reminds me a lot of Brian Cashman and Hal Steinbrenner, where, you know, Yankee fans are pulling their hair out saying, why aren't you changing from Cashman? Cashman is someone who Hal trusts. And I think that's the same thing going on with Mo. But the two big front office names that people are talking about, one, David Stearns, who was head of baseball operations for the Brewers for a lot of years. He's kind of been put on layaway this year before his contract runs out. And the other is Mike Hazen, who's the head of baseball ops for the Diamondbacks. I think the Diamondbacks will re-sign him, but he's headed toward free agency. And a lot of folks in Boston are wondering if Hazen would be someone that the Red Sox could land if they moved on from Heim Bloom.
Ooh, interesting. Okay, last one for the week. John Chacona writes in, perhaps inadvertently, Buster once called Derek Gould the best baseball beat writer working now. His hit on yesterday's pod proved it. The analogy of the Cardinal situation to the game of Mousetrap was deadly accurate and beautifully poetic. Bravo. And we must mention that the Cardinals were walked off two nights ago by the Marlins.
Yeah, why don't you play that sound of how the Cardinals lost the game, which is almost incomprehensible. A little chopper hit back to closer Jordan Hicks, who apparently has the yips.
And the runner goes from second to third on a tapper back to the mound, and it's overthrown. One run's going to score, and here comes the game winner. How do you like that? It's a Marlins walk-off win!
Derek couldn't have come on it better. He basically described that scenario without describing it. You know, if you listen to the podcast, you would have known to expect something wacky like that. So maybe he is the best beat writer in baseball. Yeah, and
I would say, I absolutely, when I said Derek Gould is the best beat writer in America, I absolutely have meant that. And I've said it repeatedly in the past, but I didn't say it this year because he's sharing those duties with Lynn Worthy. And he's kind of moved into a bit of a different role.
Got it. Okay, well, great hit on Monday.
Before you wrap up, I got to get Derby picks from you and Sarah. Who you got, Taylor?
Well, you know who I'm going with. My guy, Adley Rutschman. If you could see Buster's face right now, maybe we'll put this on video. Incredulous, disappointed.
I will tell you. No, I'm not disappointed. I'm just saying if you're that committed to your guy and you're wearing an Orioles hat, then I would recommend to you to go out and to make a bet because he, without a doubt, is the long shot. And you might not ever have to be a podcast producer if you put your life savings on Adley Rutschman based on what the odds are.
My realistic pick would be Mookie Betts. Go ahead, Sarah.
Okay, who I think is going to win.
Mookie Betts? You're picking the two long shots. You're picking the guy who's 5'9 and 180 and the guy who's got his dad throwing to him. Come on.
I love Mookie. Taylor. Mookie's Sarah, my favorite guy to watch. Sorry.
I'm covering up my Phillies hat because who I think is going to win is Pete Alonso, but who I want to win is Mookie Betts. And that's important to establish the difference.
Why do you want Mookie Betts to win though, Sarah?
Sit on the fence. Who are you picking?
Because I'm picking Pete Alonso. I'm sorry, Phillies fans. I like Mookie Betts. I just think he's a nice guy. I love that, you know, he's kind of an underdog and my dad is a big Mookie Betts fan. So rooting for him for my dad.
Okay, for the record, Taylor picked the absolute long shot. Sarah's going chalk. Okay, that's what we landed with today. Well, that's it for today. My thanks to Carl, Sarah, Todd, Sarah, Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.